And so with that, we will then continue with the teachings from last week. Okay, so we left off, I believe it's on page 2, where it says, having first meditated on refuge bodhicitta and the four measurable qualities, reflect on the following, reciting it 721 times or more. And the verses in particular. So what we would do is we can insert this verse, you know, in the recitations that we just did, like right after the four measurables. Okay? So it says, in particular, for the sake of all mother sentient beings, by all means, I will quickly, very quickly, realize perfect consummate Buddhahood. To that end, I will now meditate on the stages of the path to awakening by means of the profound practice of Guru Deity Yoga. Okay, so that's resetting the motivation. Yeah. When it says quickly and very quickly, it could mean by the sutra path and the tantra path, or it could mean by the three yoga lower tantras and then the higher tantra. Okay, and so to do this practice of Guru Deity Yoga. So that's what we've been doing when we visualize our spiritual mentor in the aspect of the Buddha. Okay? That's what's called Guru Yoga or Guru Deity Yoga. Yeah. So instead of seeing our spiritual mentor as just kind of ordinary Joe Blow, you know, if we think that they're in the aspect, you know, that their essence and the Buddha's essence is the same thing, then when we listen to the teachings, we realize that what our mentor is teaching us is no different than what the Buddha would be teaching us if the Buddha were here. Okay, so that's how we think. And that helps us be more attentive, you know, when we listen to the teachings. So I'm just going to read what it says here. So that you get the transmission. But like I said last week, we're not going to go through this very, very long visualization. And I'm not going to explain all the prayers in it because this whole thing is actually designed for somebody who, the visualization described here is designed for somebody who's actually not a beginner, but who has quite a bit of experience, whereas what we're doing is really, you know, trying to set up a, start at the beginning with a simple practice we can imagine and do, okay? So after that motivation, it says, in the space in front of me on a precious throne, both high and wide, supported by 8 great lions on a seat formed by a multicolored lotus and by sun and moon seats, is my reigning spiritual mentor, so kind in the form of the conqueror Shakyamuni. The color of that is pure gold. So you recite from there up to, okay, sitting in Vajra posture. So that comes from the first page. Okay? And so above him, usually what happens is, you know, it doesn't say it in this text, but the first visualization we did of taking with refuge, usually after we do those recitations in that visualization, all the figures dissolve into the Buddha, and then the Buddha dissolves into us. And then again, we visualize the Buddha here in front of us as the merit field. And so that's what it's describing. But I wanted to keep it really simple and just have us do one visualization. I think that's good enough for us, huh? Okay, so above and behind him in a seat formed by a multicolored lotus, moon, and sun disk, a seated victorious Vajratara, that's the form the Buddha appeared in when teaching the Tantra, surrounded by the mentors of the blessing practice lineage. On his right is Venerable Maitreya, surrounded by the mentors of the vast activities lineage. On his left is Venerable Mantragosha, surrounded by the mentors of the profound view lineage. So often when we talk about the lineages coming from the Buddha down to our precious gurus today, we'll talk about these, you know, specifically the two lineages from Maitreya and Manjushri. Shufra Maitreya, he's teaching, giving all the teachings of the vast lineage. So that's talking about bodhicitta, compassion, generosity, all the bodhisattva practices. And then the lineage coming from Manjugosha, from Manjushri, goes down to Nagarjuna, Aryadeva, our author from last night. You know, and that, those are the teachings on wisdom, and so that they come down. And I won't explain all the Indian and Tibetan traditions, but, you know, and how the teachings come down to our own teachers. But the important point here that's being made is that we're going to be receiving teachings that originated with the Buddha, that were passed down to people who not only learned these teachings, but meditated on them and received the realizations, okay? And so that gives us a sense of confidence in the teachings that we're hearing, because there's been 26 centuries of people who have heard and practiced and actualized these teachings, okay? And so here's the names of all these people, and as you study more, and then you study the texts of some of these people, you go, wow, you know, I mean, whoa. It's like very clear, the wisdom that is in these texts is just mind-blowing, you know. And so when you get that sense, then when you, you know, kind of think of the lineage, really a lot of faith and confidence arises in your mind, because you've learned the teachings that they've taught and you've thought about them. And you thought, whoa, you know, kind of none of my university professors know that, you know. And nobody else I've ever met can talk like that and can really show me how to transform my mind in that way. Okay? So you really have that inspiring feeling that comes from that. I remember when my teacher was, you know, when we heard the teachings of this long practice, you know, when I was a baby beginner, and we would do this long practice, reciting the names of all of the lineages, you know, from the time of the Buddha through India, through Tibet, each name, you know, requesting inspiration. And this is like 5 o'clock in the morning, and I'm hungry, and, you know, and the chant leader is going so slow. I don't know who any of these guys are. You know? It's like, I'm thinking, oh, you know, okay, the Tibetans know these names. Now I'm somebody, Peldon, somebody, I don't know who they are. You know? And it's like, I want breakfast. You know? But then, as time goes on, and you really study these texts that these people, especially the Indian sages, wrote, you know, and then also the Jaisongkhapa wrote, and it's like, they're just amazing what they teach. And, you know, and then when you're reciting the names and asking for inspiration, you know, more feeling comes, and the craving for breakfast diminishes, yeah, because you begin to really see that, you know, wow, I'm asking all these people for their blessings and inspiration so I can really transform my mind. You know, I'm tired of being angry, I'm tired of being greedy, I'm tired of being jealous and depressed and arrogant and everything else. And here are some people who can really show me how to make my life meaningful and to transform my life into something, you know, that can have some substance to it, you know, and make a positive contribution to the world. Yeah, so then more feeling comes when you recite this. Okay, so then in front of the Buddha, we're visualizing again, is my kind main spiritual mentor, surrounded by the mentors with whom I have a spiritual relationship. So those are all of our teachers, our spiritual teachings. Teachers surrounding those are the deities, the Buddhas, Bodhisattvas, heroes, heroines, an assembly of Arya Dharma protectors. Okay? So it's kind of like, you know, if you go to a football game, you look and it's like there's all these people in the stands. Yeah? And it's like so many people. Here you are, you know, in the midst of a crowd of people all shouting, you know, what do they shout at football games now?
Go Hawks.
What? Go
Patriots.
Yeah, whatever it is. As I tell people, I went to college at the time of O.J. Simpson, and what we used to shout, I went to USC, with the, I didn't shout this, but what the crowd shouted was, kill, kill.
Oh, what? Really? Wow. Impressive.
Yeah, when O.J. came on the field, that's what the crowd shouted. So, anyway, you know, here we are. And we're not in a football game, you know, with the football things and, you know, all that. But the same idea of, like, here's so many holy beings in front of us. No shortage of holy beings in the universe. Yeah. And we're all sitting in front of them, you know, with a receptive mind. And then, you know, we were meditating on the four immeasurables, on love, compassion, joy, equanimity. Now, we're not shouting kill. We're not shouting go. We're not shouting score. You know, yeah. So it's but it's, so you can see it's like taking this ordinary thing that we usually do, sit in a crowd, or you know, you go to a rock concert, you know, and there's the people on stage and everybody's, you know, going with what they're doing, or you know, if you don't like rock, then you go to Lawrence Welk and. Lawrence Welk was my parents' generation. You know, all this kind of, you know, Frank Sinatra, you know, stuff. And so, you know, whatever it is, but, you know, what the kinds of things we usually do in crowds are usually not very virtuous things. Yeah? Are they? Yeah. Usually we commit a lot of non-virtue in crowds. It's true, isn't it? Yeah? I mean, think of the crowds you're in. You know, where do you have big assemblies, you know? I mean, an army is a crowd, isn't it? You know, what do they do? You know, football games, sports things, discos, performances, movie theaters.
Demonstrations.
Yeah. So all these things we do in crowds usually aren't so cool. So here, what we're doing in a crowd, we're surrounded by all the sentient beings, and here's this incredible crowd of the Buddha in front of us, we're doing something virtuous. Yeah? And you know how this morning, when we were, you know, we did the chants in the meditation hall? There was a very special feeling, wasn't there? All of us chanting together, and everybody's mind, you know, focused on the same purpose, you know, to purify our minds. And when we were off, you know, creating this beautiful image of offering incense and inviting all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, when all of us sit and do it together, it's really powerful, isn't it? Yeah, so this is what we're doing. Yeah. So even if you can't get to a group of people in your mind, you can create this whole scene and create the same virtue with. And when you can do the practice with others, then it's even better. Okay? Where are we? In front of them, on exquisite stands, are their teachings in the form of books of light. They send out in the 10 directions an extraordinary array of emanations in forms appropriate for taming beings. So you imagine the Buddha emanating all these different forms that are appropriate for sentient beings. The central figure and his entourage are marked with a white om on the head, red ah at the throat, blue hum at the heart, yellow spa at the navel, and green ha at the secret place. So we imagine that. These emit rays of light of the five colors. Guru Shakyamuni Vajradhara radiates light from the syllable hum at his heart. In the 10 directions, inviting from the natural abodes wisdom beings which resemble those meditated on. Once each of them has dissolved into their specific commitment being, think that by nature each one embodies all objects of refuge. Offer the seven limb prayer and the mandala and be sure to request them according to the mentor's instructions with great sincerity. So I'm going fast now, so. Because we won't be visualizing this. Next, Guru Shakyamuni Vajradhara sends out light from the syllable hum at his heart. It reaches the great multitude of peaceful and wrathful beings surrounding him. They dissolve into light and absorbed into Munindra. Munindra means the Buddha. Okay? Manindra in turn dissolves into your main mentor on your head, transforming him completely. Visualize on your head a lion throne, lotus, moon, and sun discs. From is my main, they're going back to the original text, is my main spiritual mentor, so kind in the form of the conqueror Shakyamuni, up to sitting in Vajra posture. Offer the abbreviated version of the seven limb prayer and the mandala, and then think all mother sentient beings who are present around you together in one voice request. And so here's the request prayer, which I won't explain now because we need some background. Maybe as we go on, at the end of the teaching, I can come back and explain this prayer. Okay, but we request extraordinary Guru deity, who is the nature of the four bodies, Manindra Vajradhara, I request you. Extraordinary Guru deity, who is the nature of the Dharma body, free of obscurations, Manindra Vajradhara, I request you. Extraordinary Guru deity, who is the nature of the blissful enjoyment body, Manindra Vajradhara, I request you. Extraordinary Guru deity, who is the nature of various emanation bodies, Manindra Vajradhara, I request you. Extraordinary Guru deity embodying all mentors, Manindra Vajradhara, I request you. Extraordinary Guru deity embodying all deities, Manindra Vajradhara, I request you. Extraordinary Guru deity embodying all Buddhas, Manindra Vajradhara, I request you. Extraordinary Guru deity embodying all dharmas, Manindra Vajradhara, I request you. Extraordinary Guru deity embodying all sanghas, Manindra Vajradhara, I request you. Extraordinary Guru deity embodying all dakas and dakinis, Manindra Vajradhara, I request you. Extraordinary Guru deity embodying all dharma protectors, Manindra Vajradhara, I request you. And then especially, extraordinary Guru deity embodying all objects of refuge, Manindra Vajradhara, I request you. And then we think, if I and all other sentient beings have been born in samsara and are endlessly subjected to intense dukkha, it is due to our own failure to rely on our spiritual mentors correctly in both thought and deed. Guru deity, please inspire me and all sentient beings to henceforth correctly rely on our spiritual mentors in thought and deed. Okay? So that's the request that we make, because remember, we're in the section right now about properly relying on a spiritual mentor. And that is coming at the beginning of the text, because they say that relying on a spiritual mentor is the root of the path, okay? And the root is what grows first, you know, when there's a seed, the root starts to grow down. And the root is also, you know, what adds stability to the plant. Yeah, the root is where you get the nourishment from. Yeah. Of course, you need the trunk and the branches and everything else, but the root has that particular role. So in the same way, in our own spiritual practice, our teacher acts as like a root, in the sense that when we have a good relationship with a spiritual mentor, we feel quite grounded. It's like, okay, you know, here's somebody I trust, here's somebody who's able to guide me, I don't have to run around from this center to that center and this practice to that practice looking for whatever it is I'm looking for and getting confused in the process. You know, I have some stability, this is my teacher, this is the practice I'm doing, I'm going ahead in this direction. And that adds a lot to our practice, yeah? Because we all know what it's like when we're kind of, you know, like, I don't know what I believe in, I don't know, what am I following? Yeah? I mean, this is, I think, you know, some of you were born Buddhist, but a lot of us weren't. And we had some kind of spiritual yearning, and so you know, what do? You look in the newspaper and, or you talk to your friends and you go to this guru and that guru, and you know, sometimes there's some pretty weird stuff. And then we're confused, it's like, oh, well, that sounds really good, but this sounds really good too. You know, it's like this one's saying there's God and I just need to believe in God. So that sounds okay, but this one says there's no God and, you know, I believe in karma. That also sounds good. I don't know what I believe in. Yeah, I really don't know what I believe. So that's confusion, isn't it? Yeah. So when we have a good relationship with a spiritual mentor, we've gone beyond that confusion. Yeah. So, you know, it takes some time. We don't kind of come into the Dharma and immediately find our spiritual mentor, you know. So it takes time, but when we have found that, and we know the tradition we're practicing, we know that we feel some connection with this style of practice, you know, we're following a particular teacher or a particular group of teachers, then we feel really grounded and rooted. We're not, you know, like all over the place. Okay? So like I said, this takes time. You know, we don't rush in and it's like, okay, the first teacher that I go to, yes, that one's my guru. You know, no. You know, I mean, when you get married, you don't marry the first person you date, do you? Yeah, well, maybe some people do, but, you know, you at least take some time to get to know that person before you marry them. So in the same way, you know, it's good to get to know a spiritual teacher, you know, before you make a commitment and make a relationship with that person. Because just because somebody is a spiritual teacher doesn't mean they need to be your spiritual teacher. You're the one who selects who your teachers are. Nobody else tells you. If somebody else comes and says, ah, you're the perfect disciple I've been waiting for, I'm your guru, go away as fast as you can. Hold on to your wallet while you're doing it. Okay? Nobody has the right to come and say, you know, I'm your teacher, or request me to be your teacher, or anything like that. You know, we are completely free individuals, and, you know, it's our responsibility to check out somebody's qualities and to really, you know, see what that practice is like, see what that path is like, check it out, you know, make our own decision. We're intelligent living beings, and we need to do that, you know. This is not about blind faith, not at all, you know. And the people who go in kind of blindly, like, you know, well, this is some charismatic teacher, you know, I devote everything, and where's my checkbook, and, you know, here. Those people get into a lot of trouble. Okay, so don't do that. Okay? So, but we are saying here, we're seeing that having a good relationship with the teacher is important. Okay? Why? Because it helps ground us. It helps us know the direction we're going into. It helps us have a relationship with the living being who is actually practicing the teachings. And this is not something you can get from a book, you know? There's a relationship with another living being that, you know, no matter how many books you read, you're not going to get that, okay? And I really want to emphasize here, too, that although we're broadcasting this and many people are watching it online, and that's fantastic, there is no substitute for actually coming and being physically present at a teaching, you know? I mean, even some of you were commenting on that tonight, you know, when we did our go-around this afternoon, that when you listen to teachings online, you know, you lean back in your chair, put your feet up, have a bag of chips, you know, and your drink, and you're munching the chips, you know. So all these people I'm teaching, you know, I can't see them now, so I have no idea what you're doing. This teaching, you know, and maybe you're eating dinner, you're smoking a joint, I have no idea what you're doing. Okay? So you see, you know, but if you're sitting here, I know what you're doing, and you're acting a lot better, you know, than if I don't know what you're doing. And also because, you know, you have to put forth some energy to get here, you know. And when you have to put forth energy to go to teachings and to be in front of a live human being, by virtue of your having to put forth that energy, you get something that you're never going to get, you know, through a video screen. Yeah? Okay, so the videos help. They're certainly very useful. Yeah? But there's no substitute to actually knowing a teacher and having that connection. Okay? So, we're making that request to the Buddha. And then in response to your requesting the Guru deity, remember the Buddha's on top of our head, five colored lights, so white, yellow, red, blue, and green, light and nectar stream from all the parts of the Buddha's body into your head, okay, and into your whole body. It absorbs into your mind and body and those of all the sentient beings, because remember they all have Buddhas on them too. So this is a very good visualization to do. You know, there's your boss with a Buddha on his head receiving blessings. Doesn't matter what religion your boss is. Yeah? Wouldn't that be nice if your boss received some blessings? There's the entire U.S. Congress. Ted Cruz. You know, Eric Cantor for as long as he's there. John Boehner, all these guys with the Buddha on their head. Can you imagine receiving blessings? Yeah? Isn't that nice to imagine? Yeah? It's a lot nicer than what we see them actually doing. But, you know, it helps us to have positive thoughts about them. Yeah? And it helps us to really think, oh, but they can change, you know? Okay. So all this light and nectar absorbs into your mind and body and those of all the sentient beings, purifying all negativities and obscurations accumulated since beginningless time, and especially purifying all illnesses, spiritual interferences, negativities, and obscurations that interfere with correctly relying on your mentors in thought and deed. Okay? So that light comes and is purifying every kind of hindrance, outer hindrances, you know, so that you, like getting sick or, you know, being in a country where there's warfare, where you can't, you know, go to the Dharma teachings, and inner hindrances, you know, to all of our obscurations so that that make us fall asleep in the middle of teachings or make it so that we can't concentrate or, you know, the usual Dharma teaching goes in one ear and out the other and, you know, it helps purify all those kinds of things in ourselves and in all the others too. Your body becomes translucent, the nature of light, all your good qualities, lifespan, merit, and so forth, expand and increase. So you really feel, you know, when that light and nectar from the Buddha is entering you, you know, all these obstacles are purified, you know, illnesses are cured, my lifespan increases, my merit increases, yeah, my receptivity to the Dharma increases. Yeah, you really sit and feel that, and you're connecting with the Buddha by means of your visualization. Think in particular that a special realization enabling you to correctly rely on your spiritual mentors in thought and deed has arisen in your mind stream and in the mind streams of others. So you really feel, you know, okay, I understand this. And now is going to come the explanation of what you need to understand. Okay? But doing this visualization before you actually do the analytic or checking meditation, reflecting on the points, is very helpful because you feel, you know, there's the guru in the form of the Buddha sending light and nectar into you, purifying, making you receptive, giving you the understandings. And now you're going to sit and meditate on all the different points of the meditation. Okay, so that's what's going to follow. So the next section is the actual meditation. And that has two sub-points, how to rely on the mentors in thought and how to rely on them in deed. Yeah? And the first one, how to rely on our spiritual mentors and our thought, also has two subsections, cultivating faith or confidence, which is the root, and having recalled their kindness, developing veneration or gratitude for them. Okay? So before we get into those detailed things, I want to spend some time talking about what are the qualities of a spiritual mentor that you should look for before you create that kind of relationship. Because like I was saying, you know, we're the ones who choose our teachers. From the Tibetan viewpoint, we can have more than one teacher. There's usually one teacher that we rely on principally for personal matters, you know, specific questions in our practice or in our life, and then other teachers that we also rely on for in different ways. You know, in my case, the teachers I began with, they sent me to other teachers to study with. And I don't think it was because they were trying to get rid of me. You know, I think it was because, actually, they sent me to their teachers. Yeah, they sent me to their teachers, and I studied with their teachers, you know, who were really remarkable beings. So we can have more than one teacher. We choose those, the people who are our teachers. But we have to know what qualities to look for, you know, because we're kind of naive. We go into things and then, you know, somebody looks good or you meet some kind of charismatic teacher. It's like, wow, that person is so charismatic, or wow, they're so good looking, or, you know, I mean, who knows what goes on in our very afflicted mind, yeah? So we need to know what are the qualities of a good spiritual mentor, and then check out the people we meet and see if they have at least some of those qualities, yeah? Otherwise, you know, like I say, it would be like dating somebody who you don't know and going to Vegas that night and marrying them. Ay, 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 you know, you don't, you know, you should know something about, you should know that person, and you should also have some idea about the qualities of somebody you want to marry, you know, don't you? You know, you don't want to just like, well, I don't have any qualities. Yeah, I'll marry anybody who shows up. Also, that's not very good, is it? Okay, big mess. Okay, so the ornament of Mahayana Sutras, which is a text by Maitreya, it talks of 10 qualities of a Mahayana spiritual mentor. So this is a spiritual mentor who's going to teach you not only the Four Noble Truths, but also the Mahayana path, the Bodhisattva path. Path of love and compassion and altruism and the six far-reaching practices or the six perfections. Okay, so what are qualities that we want to have in a mentor? First, somebody whose mind is tamed with the realization of the higher training in ethical conduct. So somebody who keeps whatever precepts they have taken well. Yeah, that's kind of the bottom line, isn't it? Yeah, somebody who has good ethical conduct. Because somebody who doesn't have good ethical conduct, if that person is your teacher and your role model, guess what you're going to become like? You're going to follow their example. Yeah? Your teacher's drinking, your teacher's sleeping around, your teacher's embezzling money from the center. That's your role model. You know, what are you going to do? Again, big mess. So you want somebody who, whatever level of precepts they've taken, that they, you know, keep their precepts as best as they can, and they're an ethical human being that you can really trust on a basic level. Yeah? Second is somebody whose mind is stilled with the realization of the higher training and concentration. So somebody who has some meditative ability, who will be able to guide you in meditation. Okay. Third is somebody whose mind is completely pacified with the realization of the higher training and wisdom. So somebody who has the correct understanding of emptiness, you know, especially emptiness of the prasangika madhyamaka view. Yeah. So you really want somebody who has some understanding of that. Because again, if you, you know, your guru is somebody who doesn't have any concentration, if you go to them with a question, how are they going to guide you? If the teacher doesn't know anything about Madhyamaka philosophy, how are they going to teach you the nature of reality? Okay, so we need those kind of qualities. Then for somebody who has authoritative scriptural learning, in other words, who's heard many teachings on the Vinaya, the three baskets, the Vinaya, the Sutra, and the Abhidharma, from competent masters. So somebody who is learned and who can teach you the scriptures. You know, you don't want somebody who is like inventing their own path because they've never studied anything. Or who've studied a little bit, but when they explain it, everything's all jumbled up and, you know, backwards and frontwards and crooked and, yeah. Okay, five, somebody who is in possession of awareness that perceives emptiness. So this is top-notch guru, you know. You can find somebody who really has realized emptiness. Six, somebody who has more learning and realization than you do. Yeah? Okay? And, you know, that may seem really funny, but, you know, some people are just totally infatuated by charismatic people who may have no knowledge and no realization. Yeah, so to really make sure somebody's learned, yeah, somebody knows more than you do. And then seven is skill in applying the methods to generate progress within the disciples, okay, whom he or she teaches out of a pure motivation, free from grasping for wealth, fame, or power. Okay, so a teacher who has the methods to help you progress along the path and who is teaching you with a good motivation. Yeah, we really need somebody who has a good motivation, who's not, you know, well, let's see, if I teach this person, are they a rich person or a poor person? Oh, that person's kind of rich. Yeah, I think I'll go there and teach there. They'll give me a lot of money. Okay. Or, oh, here's a nice group of people. Yeah, they'll make a good groupie crowd to follow me around. Yeah? Okay, so somebody who's looking for wealth, fame, or power. Well, people can have all sorts of psychological stuff going on. You know, they want power over others. They want, you know, a whole groupie scene around them of everybody, oh, my precious guru. You know, and you meet people like this. Yeah? But when you meet them, they, oh, my guru's so wonderful. My guru's the incarnation of this guru. My guru's the incarnation of that. They're so wonderful. But they can't remember anything their guru teaches them. Because they're so infatuated with just, you know, oh, this kind of stuff. Okay, so, you know, a teacher who plays into that is not what you need. Okay, so a teacher with a pure motivation, a teacher with enthusiasm and joy in giving time and energy to teaching. So you want a person who likes to teach, who's happy to teach, who, when you go and ask questions or ask for teachings, doesn't say, oh, you know, I'm exhausted. Leave me alone. Teaching is such a drag. You guys don't listen to me anyway, you know? Just go away. Kind of go read a Dharma book. Leave me alone. Okay? You want somebody who enjoys teaching and has enthusiasm for it, you know? And not, you know, people may be very wonderful practitioners, but not be teachers. And that's okay. You know? But when we're looking for a teacher, we want somebody who is happy to guide us, okay? Nine is somebody who has diligence and perseverance in teaching, okay? So it's not just that they have joy and enthusiasm, but they have diligence because they have to prepare the talks. You know, they have to deal with all of our questions. They have to have perseverance to keep teaching, you know, repeating the same thing again and again and again. When I look back at You know, when I go to like with the teachings with His Holiness that I try to go to every year, I've been studying with His Holiness since 1978, 79. He's still saying the same things. Yeah? Same things that he was saying, you know, all those years ago. Why? You know, because I'm a bit thick-headed. Yeah, and I need to hear things many times. And, you know, thank goodness His Holiness has that kind of enthusiasm and perseverance. Otherwise, he'd just say, you know, I taught you that back in 1979. Actually, one time he did say something like that. I was asking a question about something, and he said, I taught you that already. Okay. Then 10, a teacher who is beyond losing patience with disciples who practice poorly. We really need somebody like that, don't we? Yeah. Kind of, like I said, is it right? I taught you this. You can't even remember the points now. I told you to meditate on this daily, and you haven't even, you know, tried. In fact, you haven't even set your alarm clock to get up earlier. Yeah, and when I ask you about it, you just go, oh, no, nah. And don't tell me squarely and directly that you haven't followed my instructions, but you're making some excuse. I'm fed up. You know, we don't want a teacher like that. We need a teacher who has a lot of patience. Yeah. Who's not going to get fed up with, you know, how poorly we practice, with all of our antics, with all of our excuses. You know, that doesn't mean that our teacher is going to go, oh, that's okay, dear, that's fine. You know, sometimes our teachers can speak very forcefully and wrathfully to us, you know, but it's because they care. Yeah, it's not because they're fed up. If they were fed up, then it's like, go away. Okay. So we really need good teachers like that. Now, maybe as disciples, we need to have some good qualities too. Yeah. Okay. So we're looking for those kind of qualities in a teacher. We may not find teachers with all 10 qualities, but at least somebody who has some of those qualities. You know, it's hard to find somebody who has all of them, but at least somebody who has some of them that we feel we can really trust and follow their guidance. But, you know, when we go into the relationship, we need to see if we are proper disciples. Yeah. Because sometimes we go in and it's like, okay, checking out for teachers. Are you good enough for me? Are you good enough for me? You know. Oh, you are. Okay, you are. You get the privilege of me having me as one of your disciples. I'm this wonderful, you know, disciple. Huh? Sometimes we're like that, aren't we? Huh? Okay. And then we sit down and listen to teachings, and it's like, what you're saying is boring. Why don't you say something interesting? Or, I don't understand it. You know, say it simpler. In other words, it's your responsibility to make me understand. It's not my responsibility to try and understand. It's your responsibility to make me understand. I just sit there. If it makes sense, good. If it doesn't make sense, it's your fault. You need to change. You know, we have that attitude towards a teacher. You know, with one of my teachers in particular, sometimes he coughs a lot. Yeah, people go into the teaching and say, why does this guy cough so much? I can't understand anything. You know, he should take some cough syrup. He should get some, what do you call it? Lessons, so he can speak properly. You know, we expect the guru to kind of be our servant. Because we're in a consumer society, aren't we? And consumers call the shots. Yeah. That is not the relation, that is not the mindset we could, should go into to have in a spiritual mentor disciple relationship. That attitude is not going to work. Yeah. Absolutely not. So we need to try and cultivate within ourselves the qualities of a good disciple. Okay. So first, somebody who is impartial and open-minded. Yeah. So we have to be open-minded. We have to be willing to listen, because the teachings are going to challenge everything we have thought and everything we believe in. Okay? So we have to have a really open mind and be broad-minded. It's like, I'm going to listen and I'm going to think about this. I'm not just going to tune it out because I don't like it. Okay? And I'm not going to tune it out because it threatens my whole worldview and my nice little ego empire. Yeah, we have an ego empire, don't we? Second quality of a good disciple, somebody who's intelligent, who's able to discriminate between beneficial and misleading forces on the path. So somebody who's intelligent, you know, who when we receive teachings, we think about them. We can differentiate, you know, oh, this is something that is correct, this is something not correct, this is something that's beneficial, this is not beneficial. Okay? Because sometimes, too, you know, we hear a teaching and we don't understand it correctly. And when we don't understand something correctly, we develop all sorts of wrong ideas. Then we get mad at the Buddha, we get mad at our teacher, we get fed up. But it's all based on our own wrong idea. So, you know, if we're getting angry at a teaching, chances are we haven't properly understood it. So, you know, instead of just saying, I don't like this teaching, we have to kind of step back and say, am I understanding this teaching correctly? Yeah. If we're listening to a teaching and the result is we're having more self-hatred and more confusion, then chances are we're not understanding the teaching properly. So we need to be intelligent and recognize that. Okay? For example, one of my friends, you know, the traditional way that sometimes in the Tibetan community, the way they talk about the disadvantages of the self-centered thought, she developed, you know, all the faults of the self-centered thought. She began to feel very guilty for being selfish, thinking, you know, I'm such a bad person because look how selfish I am. Here are all the disadvantages of being selfish, and I'm so selfish and I have all of this. And she actually went and asked one teacher if this is the correct way to think. And because she was asking through a translator, who I don't think understood the question, the teacher said yes. And so she's going home, just meditating like this, feeling worse and worse, like, oh, I'm such a disaster because I'm so selfish. Until finally, you know, she met somebody who could explain it to her properly, and then she realized, oh, no, you know, I am not union oneness with the self-centered thought. The self-centered thought is my enemy. I don't have to blame myself for being selfish. That's not the purpose of this meditation. Okay? So we need to be smart in our own practice, in our own way of understanding. And if we're getting confused or, you know, our mind is more afflicted, to be able to say, you know, I'm not understanding this teaching properly. I need to go ask questions. I need to clarify things. Okay? So we need that quality. Yeah, impartiality and open-mindedness. Second, intelligence to discriminate, you know. Third, intense longing to gain spiritual understanding and experience. So in other words, we need to be serious. Yeah. We need to be a serious practitioner. Okay. So in other words, we need to be serious. Yeah. that we're a sincerest practitioner who really wants to learn, who really wants to gain realization. We're not doing Dharma kind of as a habit, hobby, you know, kind of Friday night, Saturday morning, nothing better to do, I'll go to Dharma class. They say something interesting, nice. If they don't, well, at least they have refreshments afterwards and I'll have some good cookies and I'll see my friends. Not with that kind of attitude, okay? We need to be serious. And then fourth is we need to have appreciation for the Dharma itself and for our Dharma teacher, you know, and not just take the teacher for granted or the teachings for granted, okay? Sometimes they talk about six qualities of a good disciple. Okay, so a disciple fit to be led along the sublime path of the Lamrim practice must, one, have great interest in the Dharma. So we have to ask ourselves, you know, do I have these qualities? And if I don't, how can I develop them? So great interest in the Dharma. Two, during the actual teaching, be able to keep his or her mind alert and well focused. How many of you have been dozing off during this teaching? I don't want to point fingers, but I've been seeing a few people. Okay, so you have some work to do on that. Three, have confidence in and respect for the teacher and the teaching. You know, so really appreciate your opportunity. Yeah. Four, abandon wrong attitudes towards the teaching and maintain receptive ones. Okay, so not just, you know, be filled with our own opinions. Somebody who's really opinionated, somebody who's a know-it-all, has a really hard time listening to teachings. Because, you know, they're so full of their own ideas that nothing new can go in. Okay, five, somebody who can maintain conditions conducive to learning. Yeah, so who listens well, who goes home and thinks about the teaching they received, ponders it, maybe has some questions that they want to ask the next time. Okay. Six, somebody who eliminates any unconducive conditions. Okay, so, you know, if we have unconducive conditions for our practice, then, you know, like, you know, our book club meets the same night as the Dharma teaching, then what are we going to choose? Dharma or our book club? Yeah? So having our priorities straight in our mind, you know, what we're going to choose, where we're going to put our time and energy. So to really spend some time contemplating these qualities of a good disciple and trying to cultivate them in ourselves. Okay. So maybe we're over time already. That doesn't matter because we were late starting. Anybody have any questions? Yeah.
I've heard of the term heart teacher.
Yeah, or heart teacher or root teacher.
Mm-hmm. Teacher. How do you know you've found your heart teacher?
Okay, so how do you know if you've found your heart teacher or your root teacher? You know, you study with different people, and then, you know, there may be somebody who you just feel like a really deep connection with. And when that person speaks the Dharma, it just really goes in at a very strong level. Yeah? So it's not like lightning and, you know, colors and stuff like that. I mean, for me personally, I didn't even know anything about root teachers or anything. All I knew when I went was what they taught helped me, because when I thought about it with, you know, reasoning, it made sense, and when I put it into practice, it helped me control my crazy mind. And so I kept going back. And then after, I don't know how long, maybe a year or 2 years or something, I heard the term root guru. And then it was like, oh, well, I guess this has been my root guru. Yeah? Other questions? Comments?
And the point about the first one under the qualities of a disciple, and the first one, impartial and open-minded.
Yes.
What is impartial referred to?
Impartial is the first quality of a disciple. Impartial means that they can take it in. Yeah. It's not like, well, if you're talking according to what I already agree with, I listen. Mm-hmm. But if you're propounding a view that I haven't heard already, then I'm going to block it out. Okay. So somebody who's receptive, who can take the teachings in.
Then
oh, okay, a question.
How important is it to meet your teacher face to face?
How important is it to meet your teacher face to face? Very. And by face to face, I mean at a live teaching. Yeah. It doesn't necessarily mean, like with His Holiness the Dalai Lama or some of the very, you know, highly respected lamas, they have hundreds or thousands of disciples. You're not necessarily going to be able to go in and talk to them one-on-one. Okay? So that's not what I mean face by face, but I mean you're sitting in the audience when they're teaching alive. You know? And I think that adds a dimension to the relationship that, as I was saying before, you can't get through a book or through a camera. Of course, if the book is what you have, or the camera screen is what you have, of course you use that. And of course, if you already have a relationship with the teacher, then when you listen to teachings online, you know, it's much easier because you already know that person, okay? So we all do the best we can given the circumstances we can. But what I would like to say is that, you know, if you meet the Dharma online, then try and make an effort, and there's some teacher who really resonates with you, try and make an effort to go somewhere where that teacher is teaching and to be there where you can be in a live audience and hear the teachings directly. Mm-hmm. Another question? Two more.
Is it possible to have more than one guru?
Is it okay to have more than one?
Possible.
Is it possible? Yes.
Another one is, what if you are drawn to a teacher but the students seem unethical and confused?
What if you're drawn to the teacher but the students seem unethical and confused? Be careful. You know, it's difficult because sometimes, you know, it can be a really good guru, a really good teacher, but the students are just off the wall. But on the other hand, if, you know, many students are just unethical and the teacher's not correcting them or not teaching them properly, yeah, then if you join in with that group of disciples, they're going to influence you and chances are you'll become like them. Yeah? So in that kind of instance, what you might do is read the teacher's books or something, but not hang out around that circle of disciples. Because, you know, you can tell something about a teacher from the disciples. But having said that, sometimes you will get some disciples who are off the wall. So if it's one or two disciples off the wall, don't judge the teacher by that. But if the whole group is kind of weird, take that into consideration.
Back to the question about attending the teaching live, but you come to Singapore only once a year.
Yeah.
And does it mean that it's okay for us to learn through the web?
Well, that's what I was saying. Like, we have a relationship already, so even though you're listening, you know, through the web, because you're in Singapore, we already have a relationship. Okay? So, you know, we kind of know you. we know each other, yeah. So then you're going to hear the teachings in a different way because you know that person already, okay? But when I come to Singapore, then it's very important that you're inside listening to the teachings, not outside selling books, snacking, and talking to your friends. Yeah? That's why every year all the organizers are outside. And then I hear people laughing. And I go say, how come you're running the teacher? Oh, well, we have to take care of all the people who are late. Really? During the whole teaching there are people who are late? Gotcha.
I stopped doing that lately.
Okay. Good. Good. Okay.
What is the chance of you traveling to Singapore more often?
What's the same chance of you traveling here more often? Yeah? I think that actually is another quality of a good disciple. To Singapore how many times, and you've come here how many times? I've gone through jet lag how many times? Yeah. Okay. Ready?
May the spiritual teacher soon lead me on the sacred path, and all spiritual friends who practice it have long life. May I pacify completely all outer and inner hindrances, grant such inspiration, I pray. May the lives of the venerable spiritual mentors be stable, and their virtuous actions spread in the 10 directions. May the light of Losung's teachings dispelling the darkness of the beings in the three worlds always increase. Idam Guru Mandava Kamyatayami.
Due to this merit,
may we soon attain the awakened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind not yet born arise and grow. May that born have no decline, but increase forevermore. In the snowy mountain pure land, you're the source of good and happiness. Powerful tempting gods of generosity, may you stay until samsara ends.
May the deeds of explaining and practicing the Dharma
done by groups supporting the teachings and their upholders, who spread the view of dependent arising and nonviolent actions in the 10 directions, and especially at Shravasti Abbey in the west floor.